Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I talk to the spirit?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Yeah. Dance party time. It's almost like the Goblin Queen to create a dance mix just for us. We are here with a new episode of the Geek Bites. And on this episode of the Geek Bites, we are going to be breaking down episode 3 of X-Men 97. And we are here brought to you by the
Geek
Bites. There it is. Michael, X-Men 97, episode 3. As I predicted, this one was a wild one, all over the place in some interesting ways, essentially encapsulating a crossover story here from 1989, the Inferno storyline, Madeline Pryor, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Nathan, to be Cable, Bishop, Beast, all kinds of stuff, and Mr. Sinister as well. And then right at the end, a little Forge action. So there was a lot in this particular episode. What are your thoughts here? As an avid original X-Men animated series watcher, how were they able to condense all of this into one episode? And what did you think of this episode?
I mean, this episode was wild. I will say what I love about this episode is I feel like with these first three episodes of X-Men, we kind of get a little bit of everything. Like that first episode of X-Men, like them going against like the Master Mold and the Sentinels was like, we got awesome X-Men action. We got Cyclops using his laser blast to like land. Yeah. We got Storm turning the desert to glass. Like we got some epic X-Men action. And then with episode 2, we got more action, but we also got what I will say is the wokeness of the X-Men. I mean that in the best possible way. I mean, we have Magneto giving a speech to the United Nations. We have a mob of angry anti-mutant people storming the United Nations. Like we definitely got this is what X-Men is really all about. And with this episode, we got what my favorite thing is about the X-Men, a wild fucking soap opera. Like X-Men, people can say there's a lot of reasons to love the X-Men. There's the message of tolerance. There's the awesome powers. There's like just tons of things to love. But at the end of the day, I think what most of us really love about the X-Men, when we're being really honest, is that it is one of the most over the top, ridiculous soap operas in comics. And this episode brought all that home in a major way. In an almost comical way, except that it was actually all really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really surprised at how it walked that line. Like, I remember collecting Inferno, reading Inferno, Chris Claremont involved in this. I remember that collecting that line, and it was like, this is crazy. Jean is dead. Madeline Pryor comes in. He marries Madeline Pryor, and you find out she's been a product of Apocalypse. Of course, they changed that for this particular thing. And then what that leads... Oh, sorry. Nathan got this thing into him.
Nathan Pryor Summers is a product of Apocalypse. Madeline Pryor has always been Mr. Sinister. But like, to your point, I mean, for those sitting at home who are like, what the fuck are we talking about? So like, in the X-Men comics, everything that's happened in like these three episodes is sort of like, you know, drawn out over a really long time. Like Jean Grey was the Phoenix. I think we all are well aware of that. She was the Phoenix in the comics. She was the Phoenix in X-Men, the animated series. But in the animated series, Jean sacrificed herself and then everyone brought her back. So she pretty much lived by the end of that episode because it was the 90s and they weren't going to kill off one of the main characters. In the comics, Jean Grey died and was supposed to be dead, like was dead for a while. Yes. And then Scott Summers met this chick named Madeline Pryor. She looked a lot like Jean Grey, kind of messed with his head because Scott Summers has had his head messed with a lot in the X-Men comics. Yes. He ultimately married her, gave birth to Nathan Summers. And then eventually we found out that Jean came back and Madeline Pryor became the Goblin Queen and the Mr. Sinister of it all. Like, and then eventually Apocalypse gave Nathan Summers the technovirus, which is why he had to go forward in time, ultimately becoming Cable. And they took all of that and said, here it is in one episode.
Yeah. They trimmed all the fat, made it a family drama instead of making it all over New York, because what Madeline Pryor did was drop all these demons and goblins all over New York, and they kept it into a small story, and it worked even with, and they still were able to go into like all these weird psychic realms and multiple dimensions and have all this stuff going on and still make sure they were underlying the storylines here that they had established in the first two episodes. Magneto taking the lead here, Scott questioning his leadership because he couldn't even protect the woman and the child he loves. How could he be leader of the X-Men? A Bishop himself wanting to get back, more feeling kind of like a little bit left out of everything that's happening and a little alone. And there's the stuff with Jean. So all of this stuff was happening the whole time. And the Gambit stuff with Rogue and his jealousy with Magneto. So they still found time to make sure they hit on the overall storylines and then introduce the big bad by the end and still do honor to the Inferno storyline, man. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I think to your point, they did a really great job of like touching base on all of the stuff that they've established in the first two episodes. So it didn't feel like we took a departure to go like, let's tell this story. Like the story really did serve. And I mean, one of the main reasons that they did, and I think a good change that they made was, to your point, in the Madeline Pryor story from the comics and the Inferno storyline, Madeline Pryor has magic and is opening portals to hell.
Yeah.
Now, they took the idea of that and the idea of the Goblin Queen and kept it pretty soundly based in Jean Grey's powers. Like, what was happening in the X-Mansion was not really going to hell. It was a clone of Jean Grey using her psychic abilities to do some weird psychic shit. So they took the idea of it. It's my two minor, before we get into everything I loved about the episode, because I loved the episode, my two minor, and I am talking minor critiques, is one, she calls herself the Goblin Queen because Madeline Pryor in the comics is the Goblin Queen. But when she announces she's the Goblin Queen, there's really no reason to be a Goblin Queen. Like, you're a clone of Jean Grey. You're pissed that you're not the real Jean Grey. You want to attack everybody. You want to give them visions of hell and their worst fears. All makes sense. Announcing that you're the Goblin Queen, it's kind of at the end where she's like, call me Madeline Pryor. And you're like, all right, I guess that's just a name that you like. And then the other thing, and this is super minor, but it did kind of jar me, is that Sunspot never came back. DaCosta never came back. Like, he left at the end of episode one. He's not in episode two.
Right.
And at no point did he come in and be like, hey guys, thought I'd stop by to see what's happening at the X-Mansion. He's just there.
Right.
Which that was like, I was a little bit jarred by that. I was like, oh, okay, I guess Sunspot's here. But what happened with him and him seeing his mom and him and Jubilee watching it, like, I loved everything that was there with him. So I'm like, okay, cool. If he's there, maybe just not having him leave at the end of episode one, or it just felt like there was more to that story. So I was kind of like, okay, I guess he's here. That seems like a little bit of a weird jump, but those are two very minor quibbles.
Yeah.
In an episode that I think ultimately was super, super successful in telling a great clone story.
Yeah. And look, they spun that plate for Sunspot as well to make sure that was still in the air by having his mother appear and say, you know, through Sinister's visions that she was disappointed in him and she's not his son. He's not her son and what have you. So they managed to still keep that afloat overall as well in terms of the overall storylines that they're telling this season. But my only quibble is that I felt a couple of times like the changes within Madeline were so quick that you were just asked to go along with it. But look, that's minor, as you said, because they deserve an incredible amount of credit to shove that entire storyline into 30 minutes or less with credits and make it work overall and still deliver the emotional punch at the end. Beautiful scenes with Madeline / Jean there with Nathan and talking how, you know, we're going to be with you. You're not going to be alone, blah, blah, blah. And then the situation with Jean and Madeline at the end, as you said, where she says, call me Madeline Pryor. You know, I've wanted to go for quite some time and what have you. So, and now Jean is left trying to figure out like what memories are hers, what memories are Madeline's, and how she can put this together. So I thought that was a great way to kind of touch base with all of this stuff and still make it work emotionally by the end of the show.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, it all was happening like rapid fire. I think that the Mr. Sinister kind of taking control of her,
yeah,
put it, you know, like kind of gives you a little bit of like, okay, that I can buy that you're jump starting into full like mega supervillain territory. Because I do think the frustration of like, I mean, she really thought she was Jean.
Yeah, 100%.
And when Beast turns around and he's like, so this is Jean and you are not.
You are not Jean.
And like all of that, I mean, like they did a really nice job. I mean, if you're a comic book person, you know, Jean shows up on the doorstep and you're pretty much like, okay, so that's Madeline Pryor. Like if you know the comics and you know that Madeline Pryor is really Nathan Summers mom, like there's stuff that you're like, okay, I get what this is. But if you didn't know that,
yeah,
like that switcheroo of like, well, who is this? Is this a clone of Jean? Oh no, you're the clone. I thought that was really well done. And I thought that the way, again, the turn was pretty quick, but using the memory of Jean Grey's best friend when she was a kid dying, and then that leading into them having that amazing vision where like it's like Nathan, you're that moment with Nathan, you are Nathan Summers' mom, like basically the I don't know when we were switched, I don't know what are my memories and I don't know what are your memories, but the one thing that's very clear is you are Nathan Summers' mom,
right?
Like, and that's a, and you being that child's mother, no one can take that away from you. And that being the thing that like broke her from Mr. Sinister's power, I thought that was quite lovely. And so I thought that was nice. And I like that they ended it both for the audience and for Jean and Madeline with a, we're not really going to tell you when Mr. Sinister switched you guys.
Yeah.
Like, was this part, did he do this during the Phoenix saga in X-Men 97, or I think it's like the Phalanx saga, or like whatever that other saga that Mr. Sinister is in, where there's lots of body swapping and all this stuff happening. Like there are multiple points, like Mr. Sinister was pretty present in the animated series. So there are multiple points where this could have happened. So how long were they together? And then that shot at the end of Scott and Jean in like the sort of ruined bedroom staring at each other, kind of like, we're strangers, but we're not. Did we even get married? Like, I don't know. Like, I thought leaving all of that hanging again, that's really great soap opera.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and poor Scott. I mean, I know a lot of people were like, justice for Cyclops last week, because of those two episodes. But this is where we see why the Scott Summers character is a very, very difficult character to get right in live action, because the X-Men comics put him through a lot of shit. Look, I know they put Jean through a lot of shit. Certainly, she's number one on the list of the amount of things they put people through in the X-Men universe. But Scott, as a companion to Jean, because even Wolvie was, or Logan was really like a little...
No, I like that you call him Wolvie, like you know, best friend. Man, you know Wolvie.
It's my boy. But like the conversation there, when he's bringing her back and Jean, he's like, go into my mind. See how I feel about you. Now you know what's up. Like, even that dirty little motherfucker is always sliding underneath Scott, even when she's like in a place of having mental issues and figuring out what's going on. He doesn't miss a beat to try to make sure that Jean knows how much he loves
her. He's trying to help her. He's trying to help her. He loves her. But I also love, and this is just classic X-Men 2 to that moment, is that, you know, Logan steps forward. Everyone is like, everything is going down.
Yeah,
Mr. Sinister's got the baby. The Goblin Queen's over here. Magneto's like, let's go do this shit. And Jean can't control her powers. And Logan steps in and he's like, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. And right when she's like, wow, I didn't know that that's how you really felt. The second she says that, she's like, I got to go help Scott.
Oh.
I got to help Scott.
On. You're trying to be nice here. He says, go deeper. And then she says, I got to help Scott. So, you know, Logan knew what he was doing. A little dirty Logan, but yes. Well, what'd you think about the baby storyline here? Because obviously that's going to pay dividends down the road. It's a little bit different, as we said, from the comics, because it's Apocalypse who does it. And we did see Angel Apocalypse last episode that morphed into. Yeah. So the Apocalypse thing is still kind of humming around. Did you like that they did this and then brought Mr. Sinister back to be what seems to be the main villain, because Sinister was such a big part of the animated series?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not such an X-Men purist that I'm like, oh, God, they didn't make it Apocalypse. Like, I think kind of, again, the way that they've sort of collapsed a lot of these stories and kind of woven them together, I think this is super fun. And I think if you're a fan of the comics, rather than going, oh, they did it wrong, it's kind of fun to see how they're taking what the 90s X-Men did and then the Claremont run and the stories and just weaving it all into this new thing. So I think it worked really nicely. And, you know, what's interesting is that, like, we've seen Cable
Yeah.
In the old animated series.
Right.
So like we sort of, and like even in the old animated series, they sort of, they never say it explicitly, but they sort of hint at it. Like he sees images of Scott and Jean. He's like, oh yeah, I know all about them. Cause like, obviously even then we knew who Cable was, right. But so having him have appeared then and now Bishop leaving with the baby to go to the future, it's like, you know, to your point, like it'll pay those dividends. It'll be fun to see where all that goes. But again, like Scott being torn up because he doesn't want to abandon his son the way his dad abandoned him when he went to space, and Jean being like, I don't even know if this counts as my kid or not. And then Madeline giving the kid the memories before she hands him off and takes off. You're like, man, General Hospital ain't got nothing on Xavier's mansion. Like it is wild in there.
Yeah. And even Gambit dealing with seeing Rogue in Magneto's arms and then seeing Rogue say these things through Sinister's, of course, deception. Say these things that she wants. She's found a real man now, and he'd go back to the swamp and hang out. Well,
along those lines, the other thing is, like, you know, we keep talking about. I was talking with some other animation people about this, like X-Men 97. Like, where does it fall on the? We still got a lot of kids animation out there.
Yeah,
like Strawberry Shortcake on Netflix, in case you'd like to check it out. Thanks. And then we've got things like Vox Machina or Invincible that are very clearly for adults. I mean, Invincible's with its graphic violence and like all of its storylines. And X-Men 97 is definitely made for fans of the 90s series, but I think kids who are into X-Men could check it out. But some of the visuals... to your point, like the Rogue and Magneto thing, the way their skin was like melting into each other, or like the creature that fell out of the TV that turned into Roberto's mom, like the images that they were doing, like they were legit creepy.
Yeah.
And well, I love that they allowed it to go that creepy.
Let's talk about that. Did you like the animation style for this? Obviously it's maintaining style for the first two episodes, But did you like the places visually that they took us, like the Jean versus Jean fight, that area, the Magneto fighting Madeline Pryor, and the way they used the glass and the metal and all of that, and even the hellscape that they were in that Sinister puts them in? Did you like the outlandish, insane kind of, this was almost felt a little Doctor Strange-ish from like the old school Doctor Strange, like vibe there with the multiple planes going on at the same time. Did you like that approach of the style of animation?
Oh, for sure. I mean, across the board, this episode really leans into more of the horror elements of comics. Mm. I mean, obviously all the depictions of hell, the sort of scary, even the fact that Jubilee and Roberto are watching a scary movie.
Oh, good point.
And the fact that Mr. Sinister's lab is in this like Dr. Frankenstein Victorian church. I mean, like, all of the imagery is very horror inspired in a really, really fun way. But yeah, like, I mean, oh, we're watching a scary movie and the creature like falls out of the TV and Jubilee explodes it and it comes back to life and it turns into Roberto's mom. Like, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Going literally into hell, like falling through the floor. I mean, even Morph coming out when like Wolverine's like, what's going on? He's like, don't you know we're in hell? Like, it's just... Morph being in the bath in the locker room.
Oh yeah,
smoke coming out and everything, like that's right out of Carrie. I mean, like, so all of the horror influences were really present. But the other point to what you were saying, and I think this is where X-Men in three episodes, this series has really just knocked it out of the park, is they understand each of these mutants' abilities in a way that is allowing them to just kill it with the action.
Yeah.
I mean, Bishop being like, you know, Cyclops, hit me.
Yes.
And Cyclops like hitting Bishop with everything he's got so that Bishop can charge up and like wipe out all the, like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think the MVP moment of this episode, which you just brought up, is Madeline Pryor versus Magneto.
Yeah.
Where they're fighting each other, and Magneto, like, we just saw how powerful he, in case you didn't know, we saw him in the last episode and you saw just how powerful Magneto was. And the second Madeline Pryor's like, oh, you can just do metal.
Right.
And then she takes all of those shards of glass and just starts slicing him up. I mean, that's fucking badass. Like, that is great mutant on mutant action. And then to the other point, we've seen it so many times in X-Men, but any fight on the astral plane.
Yeah. Dude.
Like, like Jean Grey versus Emma Frost, Emma Frost versus Professor X. Like anytime two people, two really powerful telepaths go toe to toe, it gets weird. And it definitely got weird here. So the two of them kind of going at it. I mean, even just Jean sort of astral projecting into that church and being like, we're fucking done here. Yeah. Like all of it was just like, I love that. And even just using it as the opportunity to go back and see that first moment when Professor X came to Jean's house as a little girl, which the two of them sort of are sharing that memory because neither one of them is quite sure who, you know, like, I mean, I guess not. Like we all know that's obviously Jean Grey. Like that's not right. Madeline Pryor, but Madeline Pryor remembers it.
Yeah.
And then kind of really going into the womb and seeing Nathan, like the whole thing was like, it was weird in all the right ways.
Yeah, I think what you said about the power thing is important to remember because the show itself built through the powers, right? Sinister comes in, messes with everybody. Then the Goblin Queen comes in. They fight off all this stuff with Sinister, the X-Men do. Then the Goblin Queen comes in, and there's a battle there, and it looks like they're going to lose. But then Jean comes down. So we already see how powerful Madeline could be. She could absolutely handle the X-Men, no problem. But Jean has to come in so that we level up to the next level with Jean's power. So now we understand the level of Jean's power, which is not only just her ability to mess with stuff, but also her ability to bring Madeline to this place where she sees and they share their memories, you said earlier, Mike, of the loss of their best friend. So with all the madness and the soap opera and everything else, the message is still about love and choosing love and reconnecting with the things you love in the end. And that's what breaks the spell. And she reaches down and asks Cyclops to help him go save their baby. So,
I mean,
that's fantastic to see that here in a
construction. And now, like, when she, after kicking the shit out of them,
yeah.
for her to reach down and for Madeline and Cyclops to go in and stick it to Mr. Sinister, like, really good stuff. And yeah, to your point about Jean, just real nice justice for Jean Grey fans.
Yeah.
Because Jean Grey fainted a whole lot in the 90s.
And died.
Well, yeah, died for a minute. But like, you know, like Jean Grey, as much as they did, like, you know, one of the biggest serialized arcs at the time with the Phoenix Saga, even if Fox aired it all out of order, Jean Grey did faint a lot. And so it's, again, it's nice to see Jean Grey in the show that you're like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Jean Grey is like the most powerful mutant. Like she is wild powerful. So it's nice to see that respect being given to my girl.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm sure Jennifer Hale, who is a phenomenal voiceover actress, who I've had the honor to speak with a couple of times on podcasts, is excited to be able to do this version of Jean and do that Madeline Pryor as well. Having her play both those voices, I thought was fantastic to show what she could do with a character like that. What did you think about the ending of it? Because Madeline is not the Madeline Pryor, it seems like, that we've gotten in the comics, because when she gets the spell broken in the Inferno, she still spins off and becomes a villain. It seems very much she's on her own journey here to discover who she is and may become an ally down the road. So do you like that twist in the story with Madeline that we're gonna see her kind of figure things out, maybe come back later on in this season?
This may make some fans of the comics mad, what I'm about to say, but it's like Madeline Pryor, once you had the whole, were you Jean Grey, were you not Jean Grey, once she, like, after the Inferno arc and everything else, it's kind of like, what do you really do with Madeline Pryor? Like if she just went away at the end of this episode and said, I'm going to go figure things out, I'm good.
Oh, okay.
Fair. I'm fine. Fair. Like let Madeline go figure out her life. Like, maybe give me a post-episode 10 tag where she's working at the DQ and just living her best life. Like, I'm good. You know, like, I don't, because, like, to really do any of the stories that are really sort of like the Madeline Pryor stories, that, like, she's gonna have to get into the magic of it all.
Yeah.
And, like, I kind of like her just as, like, a straight up Jean Grey clone with, like, the telekinesis. Like I like that. Yeah. And if we end up going, oh, well, now she's opened a portal to hell, and now we've got Ilyana Rasputin coming in to do this, and now we're doing actual demons, like, it just opens up a whole part of things where you're like, I like where we're at right now. Let's just stay here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I have a feeling she is going to come back because she's got to get revenge on the Sinister. Probably her and Jean will probably take him down at the end of the series or near the, because I haven't seen anything past the first three episodes I've not seen. So I'm just guessing at this point that she'll find a way back
to the whole situation. But it's an interesting thing, Mike, to have this change in her character from the comics, because Nathan's origin from the comics and change in her character, because Madeline in the comics is very clear that Madeline is the mom of Nathan, right? Now with these shared memories, Nathan, when Cable shows up again from the future, may have to look at this situation as having two moms. And that's going to be a really interesting thing to explore if they do that and play that out in one of the episodes later on this season.
Yeah, I mean, like, Madeline is still very clearly Nathan's actual physical biological mom. Right. But yeah, like, Jean
sharing the memories.
Jean has some memories, and yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they play it, because you're right. I mean, like, those little changes, it's like the butterfly effect. You're like, a little change here, a little change there. Well, oh, it was an apocalypse. We did it this way. This is how we did the Madeline story. It's like, yeah, when you get down the line, if you do want to go back around, I mean, it's like, it's the opposite of what I was just saying. If you do get around and you all of a sudden want to have Madeline Pryor open up a portal to hell above Manhattan, or you want to do the other things, like, the stories will naturally have to change around a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. One last thing, we should hit the Forge situation right at the end of this particular episode. Storm, who had lost her mutant abilities in episode 2 here, she's at a bar in Dallas, Texas, having a drink, and then
Tequila Mockingbird.
Interesting references there. Goes to sit down, and this man seemingly knows that she's lost her powers and knows of her powers, and tells Storm that his name is Forge and that he is a friend of Charles Xavier. Michael, do you want to let people know who Forge is, or would you like me to throw in some, what do you want?
I mean, Forge is awesome. He's a great mutant. He can build a ton of shit. He actually did show up in X-Men the Animated Series.
Oh, okay.
But I had to go check this because I was a little bit confused. Storm was not in the episode that Forge was in. So it's not her him showing up and being like, hi, I'm Forge. Like, I was like, wait a minute. And then I went and confirmed, in fact, that she was not in that episode. So that makes sense. But Forge is an amazing mutant. He's super awesome. He can build kind of anything. Actually, in the comic book, he built the gun that took Storm's powers away, which obviously they changed here. Yeah. But a lot of that arc of Storm sort of losing her powers and her and Forge, and then, spoiler alert, guess what? In the comics, Storm got her powers back at some point. But so I think, like, them doing that version of that, their version of that story, I think is going to be great. I think we talked about this last week, how a lot of people on Twitter were like, how dare they take Storm's powers away? Why would you do that to Storm? And I'm like, just... y'all, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be real, real good.
You're right about that, because Forge showing up, I think, opens that door. And you're right. That's what he did in the comics, building that weapon. So clearly, maybe he might have built an earlier version of the weapon that was used later by these guys. Maybe they stole the technology or whatever to shoot Storm to take the powers down. So who else can reverse the effects except other than someone who's knows how to build that weapon and reverse its effects? So Forge is going to play itself out, and Forge is a mutant born of Cheyenne Indian descent. I wanted to, for those of you who don't know, I wanted to throw that in there. So it's going to be interesting to see what his role is going to play, going to be in all of this as we go on through the season. Anything more we need to hit, man, that I missed out on? You like to talk about?
I mean, like, I think that, like, it's always going to be, I think we'll probably do this every season, but, like, Morph is just a living Easter egg. He's just a living Easter egg. So
all the different things he turns into. Yes.
We got, I think this episode we got Spiral.
Yes.
Who works for Mojo, who is basically if like Rupert Murdoch and Jabba the Hutt had a baby. We got Ilyana Rasputin.
We did get Ilyana. Yes.
Which is awesome for the magic fans out there. We got Ilyana Rasputin in like two forms. And then not a Morph Easter egg, but in Bishop's visions, we got to see Shard, who is also in the, comes from the future where Bishop comes from. So that was all really, really cool. Also, guys, do we think Morph is a little bit in love with Wolverine? Morph's in love with Wolverine, right?
He went in there to shower and said, I can help you reach those hard to reach places. Right.
It's a really low key thing. Like in the first episode, Morph is the one who's kind of like, oh, Logan, you're standing to the side while Scott and Jean are having this perfect life. And then it's the end of the second episode when Wolverine is sulking in the tree and Morph shows up with like beer and chips and then like turns into Sabretooth so they can wrestle.
Right.
Which I mean, who hasn't fantasized about wrestling with Wolverine? Am I right? And then even in this episode, like the way, like, I think that Wolverine and Morph have this really lovely friendship.
Yeah.
That that, as far as I remember, wasn't really something from the original series. I mean, it feels like the two of them have this really lovely bond that they've developed, which I think is sweet. But even like when Morph went into the shower, where it turned out to be Mr. Sinister, but like his fear, Wolverine being like, "Stone Morph, we all know." Like, it was, there's a whole lot of, does Morph pine for Logan the way Logan pines for Jean? Like, if they, if that's an element to the show, that's going to be really interesting, because I think they're, if that is what they're doing it really, really nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, people from that community pine for straight people. So I guess that
I have never pined for a straight guy. I challenge you to name one straight guy that I have.
Just one? Anyway.
You've lived through too many of them. I can't. Woo! That's for Geek Buddies After Dark.
That's for After Dark. All right, well, there you go. Big shout out. We didn't say, I think it's the Newton Brothers who do the music for the show. I didn't mention their name last when we were doing our review for 1 and 2. I just want to make sure we hit their name here. I thought great music throughout the entire series, especially in this episode, I thought, brother.
I mean, as an X-Men fan from the comics, I will say, like, I thought this today while I was watching it, that there's this thing that happens with X-Men comics where, like X-Men will launch a new era of X-Men. So, like, the most recent one that's wrapping up now is the Krakoa era.
But, yeah.
Like, you'll have, like, this era of comics, and, like, at the very beginning, you read it, and you're like, this is the fucking best comic. I fucking love these characters so much. It's so good. And then X-Men, because it's a giant soap opera, tends to get a little convoluted, a little all over the place. There's 95 titles. You sort of lose your way a little bit. You stop reading X-Men for a little bit. Then you come back to X-Men and you're like, fuck, this is great. This is free. And what I love about X-Men 97 is it really feels like we are in like one of those great eras of reading X-Men comics in animation. And like, it is firing on all cylinders. And like, as an X-Men, as a comics fan, as a superhero fan, but particularly as an X-Men fan, like, it's just such a joy to watch this show.
I agree with you, man. It's special. It's a special show. And you know it when you see it. You know it when you feel it. This is absolutely one of those special shows that I think everyone is coming together to enjoy for sure. All right, well, there you go. That's our spoiler review here of Fire Made Flesh, episode 3. Of X-Men 97. Thank you so much for joining us or listening to us. You can always listen to us. Mike, what do we have to tell them?
Well, I can't tell them, John, because you don't have the right thing up and I can't read the email addresses. There we go. I can tell you now that John has switched the captions on the screen. So that if you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at @geek_buddies and on Instagram @the_geek_buddies. And if you would like to follow Mr. Roka, you can do so @TheRokaSays. And if you would like to follow me, you can do so @MKToon. And after you do all that following, you can also smash that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, check out all the amazing content he's got there, leave your comments below. What do you think of X-Men 97 so far? Where do you think it's going? What storylines do you love? What storylines do you hate? Tell us below. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and some comments so we go up in the rankings. And of course, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your social, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. And look for our main show coming up later on this week. And we're going to keep reviewing X-Men 97 through the rest of the season, so rest assured on that. Thank you so much for watching or listening to us, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of the Geek Bites, brought to you by the
Geek
Buddies.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.